This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Today in this edition, a program dedicated to the family and a special focus on the apostleship of the sea, whose day is observed on July 13th. But first, news from the Vatican. My name is Kenyan Tagodfi Kampamba. The Holy See announced this week that the Holy Father will, on July 26th, visit evangelical pastor Giovanni Traetino, who was his close friend when he was Archbishop of Buenos Aires in Argentina. Pastor Traetino lives in the Italian province of Caserta in the Campania region. The venue of the strictly private visit will be the Pastor's Church of Reconciliation. The Holy See explained that the idea of making the visit came from a meeting the Pope held with a group of evangelical pastors in the Vatican last June. It was during that encounter that Pope Francis expressed his desire to visit Pastor Traetino's church. Caserta lies in southern Italy and is a prominent agricultural, commercial and industrial area. On his agenda, Pope Francis has another visit to South Korea coming soon. That Korean journey will be undertaken between August 14th and 18th this year. The theme of the trip is Rise Korea, Clothe Yourself in Light, the Lord's Glory Shines Upon You. An historic encounter took place last week at the Vatican between the victims of sex abuse by priests and Pope Francis. The meeting came after private Holy Mass celebrated by the Holy Father on Monday in the presence of six victims invited from Ireland, Britain and Germany, representing the thousands of young people worldwide that have suffered abuse at the hands of the clergy. In his homily in the Santa Marta Residence Chapel at the Vatican, the Holy Father told the sex abuse victims that he was praying for the grace for him and the church to weep and make reparation for the people in the church who betrayed their mission and abused innocent persons. The Holy Father said the scene where Peter sees Jesus emerge after terrible interrogation comes to my mind as I look at you and think of so many men and women, boys and girls, and that gaze of Jesus prompts me to pray for the grace to weep for the wrongs done to them. Pope Francis then told them he was happy to welcome them to the Vatican. Children, as we all know, are so open and trusting of their own way of understanding the mysteries of God's love and are eager to grow in the faith, the Pope said. Today, the heart of the church looks into the eyes of Jesus in these boys and girls that wants to weep, he went on. She asks the grace to weep before the terrible acts of abuse which have left lifelong scars. He said that he knew that these wounds are a source of deep and often unrelenting emotional and spiritual pain and even despair. Before God and his people, I express my sorrow for the sins and grave crimes of clerical sexual abuse committed against you, and I humbly ask forgiveness. I beg your forgiveness too for the sins of omission on the part of church leaders who did not respond adequately to reports of abuse made by family members as well as by abuse victims themselves. This led to even greater suffering on the part of those who were abused, and it endangered other minors who were at risk. I am grateful for this meeting, Pope Francis said, adding, please pray for me so that the eyes of my heart will always clearly see the path of merciful love, and that God will grant me the courage to persevere on this path for the good of all children and young people. Soon after the Mass in the chapel of the Santa Marta residence, the Holy Father had a special encounter with the victims, chatting for over 8 minutes with each one of them. Philippa Hitchin has this report.
At the end of the Pope's morning meetings with sex abuse survivors, Father Federico Lombardi said the six victims appeared profoundly moved, but also positive and serene. Responding to journalists' questions, he said each survivor spent about half an hour with the Pope, after which they expressed gratitude and deep emotion that their stories had been listened to with such attention. Far from being a public relations event, as some survivors' support groups have suggested, Father Lombardi said he hoped these important encounters would be the beginning of a road towards healing and reconciliation.
If you see the person that come out of this meeting with the Pope, you understand it was not a public relation event, but is a very profound spiritual encounter and dialogue with a pastor, a father, a person that loves and tries to understand deeply.
Well, he gave no details about their identity or the kind of abuse they've suffered. Father Lombardi said the three men and three women arrived in the Vatican on Sunday afternoon and had a first opportunity to meet with the Pope over dinner at his Santa Marta residence. Early on Monday, accompanied by a friend or relative and members of the new Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors, they listened as Pope Francis expressed his sorrow for the sins and grave crimes of clerical sexual abuse they had all endured. Speaking in his native Spanish, Pope Francis begged forgiveness not just for those whom he said behaved like a sacrilegious cult, betraying their mission and profaning the very image of God, but also for the sins of omission of church leaders who did not respond adequately to reports of sexual abuse. The Pope praised the courage of those who spoke up and shed light on a terrible darkness in the life of the church. He said he would not tolerate harm done to a minor by any individual, and he said bishops must foster the protection of minors and they will be held accountable. Pope Francis said the despicable actions of abusers not only violates the innocence of children, but also leaves deep and often unrelenting emotional and spiritual pain, even despair. He expressed his heartfelt sorrow and love for all those families who've had to deal with addiction, relationship breakdown, even suicide as a result of sexual abuse. He thanked the survivors for coming to meet him personally, saying their presence speaks of the miracle of hope, which prevails against the deepest darkness. He asked them to pray for him, that he and the whole church may find the grace to weep, to feel ashamed, and to make reparation for those who abused such innocent people. I'm Philippa Hitchin.
Christian churches across the globe are this Sunday, July 13th, celebrating Sea Sunday. On this day, people are invited to pray for seafarers, their families, and all those that support them. It is a day to think of how seafarers risk their lives to bring us the food and goods we enjoy in the comfort of our homes. Recent amendments to the Maritime Labour Convention came into effect on August 20th, 2013. To date, 61 International Labour Organization member states, representing more than 80% of the world's global shipping tonnage, have ratified that convention, and there has been an attempt recently to amend it. The hope for the amendment has been to see that there is an increase in the protection of seafarers in case of ship abandonment, death or injury. The National Director of the Catholic Church's Apostleship of the Sea in the United Kingdom is Martin Foley. He told Trace Markley in an interview that he is skeptical about the Maritime Labour Convention, which he believes does not have the necessary weight to effectively improve the lives and safety of seafarers.
I think we've yet to see what teeth it has as a convention in terms of upholding the rights of seafarers all over the world.
One of the criticisms was about the awareness of the rights of the seafarers themselves, but what about the captains of the ships?
Well, they should have more awareness. And I think this is where the training that captains receive and officers and, to be honest, ratings from maritime colleges must improve. Because there's little point in having a convention, Seafarers Bill of Rights, as it is called, that is a very worthy document, but if the very people that it's designed to protect and help are not aware of its provisions, then it's not fulfilling its purpose. So I think now that the convention is in force across the globe, there is a major piece of work to be done on the part of maritime colleges, agencies like the Apostleship of the Sea, and others, to really raise seafarers' levels of awareness about this important convention.
Now, these new amendments go further to protect abandoned seafarers and provide financial security for death or long-term disability of seafarers. So these things weren't covered before, and how big a problem are they?
I mean, this is one of the most significant problems that our chaplains and ship visitors encounter, that of abandoned ships, where the ship is left in a particular port because perhaps because it hasn't paid its dues, or there is some problem with the condition of the ship, or conditions to the crew on board. And it's very difficult to identify who is actually responsible for the crew on board the ship. Is it the agent? Is it the owner? Sometimes it's difficult to identify who actually owns the ship in question. And I think the ratification of the convention are designed to make it easier to actually identify a person, an individual, who can address the situation that the crew find themselves in. But again, I'm a bit sceptical as to whether or not these changes will have desired impact in the absence of education and awareness raising, because all too often we're told that the owner is responsible or the agent should be doing something, but if they don't do something or they don't do it quick enough, then the onus falls upon the apostleship of the sea to provide not just spiritual and pastoral support, important as they are, but then to provide basics like food and temporary accommodation. So I'm perhaps in the skeptics camp as far as the convention is concerned, because I believe that it's a very worthy document, but we've yet to see its teeth. We've yet to see how effective it is in terms of upholding and supporting seafarers' rights.
Well, I was very surprised to see that from the ILO's own website, that as of March 2014, there are 159 abandoned merchant ships, some dating back to 2006, with these abandonment cases still unresolved. So it really is a big problem. And as you say, they are concerned that many of these abandoned seafarers are still working and living on board these ships without pay. Sometimes for months, they lack food and water supplies and medical care and a way to get home.
Yeah, and whilst they're in that terrible position, neither knowing when they're going to be paid or when they're going to go home or when they're next going to sail, it's, you know, organisations like the Apostleship of the Sea that step in to provide them with the support that they so desperately need. We had a case in England earlier this year, towards the end of last year, with a ship on the Tyne, where, you know, the gaps, the weaknesses in the Maritime Labour Convention became evident to us and to the union involved. So I feel there's still plenty of work to be done in ensuring that the Maritime Labour Convention does what it purports to do. It is early days, and so, you know, let's not be too downcast, but there is plenty of work to be done just because it's now enshrined in law and it's enforceable across the globe does not mean it's job done. Plenty, plenty more to do.
One of the things that I also noticed is that ship owners are expected to have financial security to cover the abandonment of seafarers, as well as we said, death or long-term disability because of they've been injured on the job or so on. That's all very well for large commercial ship companies, but what about the smaller ones? How will this convention affect them?
Well, I think that is a very important question. I think it remains to be seen, because we've had legislation for some years now to do with ships that are inadequate, with poor you know, conditions on board, poor communications equipment. Those ships technically should not be on the seas, and yet they are. They have been. I think these problems are symptomatic of the status of seafarers in our society, that because the ships keep coming in and out of our ports on a regular basis, we don't tend to ask that many questions about, well, what conditions are these men having to put up with on board? I suppose this is a problem you're trying to manage and supervise a global industry. And it does require joined up action on the part of the international community. And it requires, I think, organisations like the Apostleship of the Sea to be ever more effective advocates for seafarers at the ILO and the UN. These are important issues that require a higher profile.
Are you planning any particular events for Sea Sunday?
Well, Sea Sunday is the main occasion in the year when the church is invited to pray for seafarers. And you know, as Catholics, we believe that's fundamental to pray for seafarers and for their families. So there'll be services and masses all across the world involving seafarers, fishing communities. I think it's a wonderful occasion when we can take time out to give thanks as well to God for seafarers, all they do for us. And I hope that many of your listeners will be able to support Sea Sunday and pray for seafarers.
The Catholic Church in Nigeria has commenced a program of hope and rehabilitation for the over 2,000 women widowed largely by the Boko Haram insurgency in its parishes in Borno and the Yobe states, including part of Adamawa state in the northeastern part of Nigeria. Addressing journalists at the workshop on financial management organized for the first batch of the widows who were selected to benefit from the scheme, the Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Maiduguri, Right Reverend Oliver Dashe Doeme, said the initiation was in keeping with Christ's teaching that the less advantaged members of society should be supported. He said the widows needed to be empowered, having been made to go through a lot of suffering after their husband's death. You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
And now our feature, gender, mutual respect, love, marriage, and the family.
Welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. In this edition, the Vatican presents the working documents for the upcoming Synod on the Family, and we shall close with an excerpt on a talk on the family by Saint Pope John Paul II. Instrumentum Laboris of this October's Synod on the Family was presented during a press conference in the Vatican. The third Extraordinary General Assembly of the Synod of Bishops will be held in Rome from the 5th to the 19th of October 2014 under the theme Pastoral Challenges to the Family in the Context of Evangelization. We have this report by Tracy McClure.
In a Vatican press briefing, Secretary General of the Synod of Bishops, Cardinal Lorenzo Baldisseri, whose office produced the document, reviewed some of the feedback received for the 39 questions examined in the survey.
Si tratta della pubblicazione dell'Instrumentum Laboris.
Cardinal Baldisseri said the questionnaire revealed Catholics show scarce familiarity with church teachings and magisterium regarding marriage and the family, suggesting greater emphasis must be placed on the preparation of pastoral care workers in different cultural and social contexts. Other pastoral challenges include crises of faith, inadequate marriage preparation, internal family pressures like drug and alcohol addiction, and even to social networks, and external economic, social, and cultural factors such as jobs, unemployment, war, poverty, violence, migration, and polygamy, which can negatively affect the family. Unmarried couples, separated and divorced Catholics and their children unwed mothers and unbelievers or agnostics wishing to be married in the Catholic Church present further challenges that require open-hearted and merciful pastoral care so that people are welcomed and no one is excluded. Cardinal Baldisseri observed that a need was expressed to simplify and abbreviate marriage annulment procedures, and, compatible with its teaching, the Church is called to examine solutions that will help unmarried couples and remarried divorced people who can feel marginated from the Church to lead serene and reconciled lives. Regarding so-called same-sex unions in the different legislative contexts, Cardinal Baldisseri said the care of the local church was highlighted, including where children were involved. An openness to life and the kind of responsible father and motherhood represented in the encyclical Humanae Vitae were examined in the survey, which found many responses recommend that for many Catholics, the concept of responsible parenthood encompasses the shared responsibility in conscience to choose the most appropriate method of birth control. The results of this October's extraordinary synod will be used to prepare the Instrumentum Laboris for the successive ordinary synod in October 2015, whose theme, Cardinal Baldisseri announced, will be Jesus Christ Reveals the Mystery and Vocation of the Family. I'm Tracy McClure.
Now, these words from St. Pope John Paul II on the family during his apostolic trip to Africa in September 1995 for the celebration phase of the first African synod. He was speaking in Nairobi, Kenya, the third stop of his three-nation visit.
At the highest point of his creative work, God called man into existence. Male and female, he created them. The book of Genesis goes on to say, man leaves his father and mother, joins himself to his wife, and they become one body. Through the union of husband and wife, the miracle of creation is renewed over and over again. The miracle by which the created calls into life a new being, made in his own image and likeness. The married woman, man and woman, united before God, form a singular unity which must be permanent and indissoluble if the family is to become a true community of life and love. If it is to guarantee the future of its children, if it is to be the domestic church and the principal place of evangelization, as called for by the African Synod, the principal place of evangelization. The family is fundamental in Africa. African society is deeply rooted in the family. This is a treasure which must be preserved and never underestimated, since every weakening of the family is the source of intractable problems. If a utilitarian and materialistic notion of the family prevails, its members tend to have expectations and make individualistic demands which sunder its unity and its capacity to build harmony and educate in solidarity. On the contrary, it's seen as a value in itself. The members realize that their personal good coincides with their duty to love, respect, and help each other. Their effective bonding and mutual support help them to face all kinds of challenges together and to overcome many difficult moments in our faith and in our devotion. The Holy Family stands out as the living gospel of life.
living gospel of love.
The gospel of word and the gospel of love.
May African families find in the Holy Family of Nazareth the path of their safe journey through the upheavals of social change which threatens to uproot them materially and spiritually from their healthy roots.
May the Christian families of this continent and of this country of King experience an outpouring of the strength and joy of the Holy Spirit for the great task of being evangelized in order to be evangelizers.
That was St. Pope John Paul II on the family during a trip to Africa in 1995. And that's all for this edition. Till the same time next week, I am Festus Tararelli.
Service of Vatican Radio, and I am Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudato Jesus Christus.